The Duval gas tax is voted in. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for listening. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. And just ahead, why you will pay more at the pump. Yes, a slightly higher gas tax is now the law in Duval County to pay for a slew of improvements across the city. Get on the line and join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, prioritizing the mental health needs of our kids in this pandemic. Wolfson Children's will join us about that. Plus, our contributor Lisa Gruba gets us outdoors and on the water this month in our wild Florida. That's later on. First, though, here's your COVID update for Thursday. The state says there was another increase overnight of 2,327 new COVID cases and 66 deaths. The death toll since the start of the pandemic in Florida now stands at 36,647. We say this every morning. Get your vaccine, please. And here are some more numbers for you. 14-5. That was the vote Wednesday at the Jacksonville City Council. They voted yes on doubling the local gas tax from 6 to 12 cents a gallon. Now, that revenue we will all pay at the pump will fund nearly $1 billion worth of road, drainage, and other infrastructure needs all around town. This money will help pay for the new 30-mile urban neighborhood Emerald Trail Network, and it will also help the Jacksonville Transportation Authority to modernize the downtown skyway. Nathaniel Ford is Chief Executive Officer of the JTA, and he's on the line now with more about all this. Nat, good to have you back on the show. Good morning.
Well, thank you for having me, Melissa.
And we're already getting calls for Nat Ford, CEO of JTA. The gas tax is going up 6 cents a gallon, Duval. Let us know your thoughts about this as we discuss what your money will pay for. 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open too. Well, first, I guess we need to begin with congratulations, Nat Ford. This is certainly a big win for the JTA, and it wasn't even a close vote.
Well, thank you for that, Melissa. But before we get started, I just want to express my condolences to our sisters and brothers in Santa Clara at the VTA, the Valley Transportation Authority there. That horrific incident yesterday has rippled through our entire industry and through the country, and just our hearts and prayers go out to them. So it was a bit of a bittersweet day, but unfortunate.
Right. Another mass shooting in America, which happens pretty much every day now. And it's absolutely horrific. And we will continue to touch on that on this program. That said, bringing it back to Jacksonville, with this gas tax now going through, there are so many projects that this is going to pay for. Can you begin by explaining to everyone the big picture, how their money will be used all over the county?
You know, thank you for that, Melissa, for that question. There is a number. There's 72 projects that are actually planned for this funding to go towards. And the great thing about the local option gas tax, it is regulated and required that it only be spent on transportation projects. Between the city and the JTA, the mayor's office and the JTA, we compiled a list of projects that deals with resurfacing, connectivity, resurfacing of roads, connectivity as it relates to upgrading sidewalks and roadways, bike lanes for those corridors that deserve bike lanes. So a lot of it is dealing with deferred maintenance, drainage issues that are experienced in many areas of our community. It also has some futuristic and preparing for the future of our community as it relates to the St. John's River Ferry purchasing a second boat, doing work related to commuter rail between St. Augustine and Jacksonville and developing that program. You mentioned already the conversion of the Skyway to the ultimate urban circulator, the U2C. And then it also has money for the Emerald Trail. So we have, you know, basic maintenance of our streets, expansion and safety of our streets, as well as dealing with some future needs as we grow as a community.
Right. And this will also free up money from the general fund to spend about $100 million on septic tank removals in neighborhoods across the city. So all of this is great stuff for Jacksonville. Let's talk about the line item for the Skyway. about $247 million. This has been a big priority for you at JTA. Tell us how you're going to convert the Skyway into what you said is the ultimate urban circulator. These are essentially driverless cars or that, you know, autonomous vehicles that people would theoretically be able to ride to a new slate of destinations.
Exactly. The ultimate urban circulator project was born out of the Skyway Advisory Committee that we had convened back in 2015 to look at the future of the Skyway as to, you know, its necessity, whether we needed to tear it down, were there alternative, you know, systems that we could deploy? Because at the very end of our discussions, it was clear that downtown was being redeveloped. There was a significant number of projects that were planned and were underway, and we needed to deal with the growth in downtown residential, commercial, as well as office. And you can see that actually happening now. You also see the growth that's happening in neighborhoods like Brooklyn and Springfield, as well as San Marco, and how do you connect those neighborhoods to the downtown core? And so out of that, the U2C project came about, and I just want to be very clear with your listeners. We are not expanding the Skyway. The Skyway will be sunsetting. What we are simply doing is leveraging the concrete aerial structure that has about another 30 years of life in it. It has a federal investment. It has local taxpayer investment in it, and it has about 25 to 30 years more life. We want to leverage that 2.5-mile structure and then use these autonomous vehicles on the structure and then also at street level and build ramps that will take the vehicles down the street level, taking the Skyway, which has been criticized for not going anywhere, but extending it so that it does connect our neighborhoods and downtown and go from 2.5 miles to a 10-mile system. And autonomous vehicle technology, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. We are part of a cadre of autonomous vehicle projects across the nation, and we were fortunate to receive a bill grant to actually do the first phase. So first phase of the project is fully funded, and we're ready to move.
And you'll be able to complete it with this reduced amount of money the council has voted to provide you with?
Well, you know, we are excited about the Emerald Trail. That was actually an amendment that was introduced by Councilman Carlucci. And, you know, at the JTA, we recognize that the Emerald Trail is a very popular and needed transportation infrastructure investment. And so we agreed to make the adjustment and take a lower amount of funding for our project. We do have a great opportunity to go after federal grants to complete the project. So right now, the $240 million is more than enough to cover the aerial conversion, and then we will seek federal funds and state grants to complete the 10 miles.
And let's, if I could, I would direct everyone to go to your website or even our website to look at how this is going to change the Skyway. But as you said, it'll go from 2 to 10 miles. The big change, of course, aside from the obvious change of riding in autonomous vehicles, is where the vehicles will go, the new nodes. Can you tell people they'll be able to use this in a way that they aren't right now?
Exactly. So the expansion that will be connected to the new system will connect all the way to our sports complex on the east side of town, east side of downtown Jacksonville, connecting to the sports complex, then going north, connecting to UF Health, then we're looking at connections in Brooklyn, Riverside area, and also extending into San Marco. And as I look out of my office right now and look over at Brooklyn, it's just there's at least 4 cranes over there where they're building the FIS campus, mm-hmm. as well as some other apartments. So, you know, we're going where people are going to be living, working, and playing.
I was getting my hair cut the other day in Five Points and talking to my hairdresser about this. And she has an apartment in Five Points, walks to work, doesn't even have a car. And she said, you know, I think I'm going to move over to the South Bank, but I'm going to have to get a car to get to back and forth to work. And I said, well, maybe not. If this Skyway conversion goes through, you would theoretically be able to take the Skyway from the South Bank over to Brooklyn in one of these autonomous vehicles, and then you could walk to work from there. So I think that might give people an idea of how people in the urban core would be able to access this expanded system. And let's go to some calls now for Nat Ford, CEO of JTA. As the gas tax passes, what are your questions about how this will change the city? 549-2937. Rusty on the west side. Hi, Rusty. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Director Ford, I was lucky to attend Councilmember DeFore's presentation at the Presbyterian Church. You've had to be a heck of a salesman and cheerleader over the last many months, and you are doing a fabulous job of it. Specific to the line between downtown and St. Augustine, I understand it's past the pretty rendering stage. It's in engineering construction documents. So what percent of construction documents there? And just further, is there a plan to trace a line like that to the airport and then down along the West Bank to Orange Park and Green Cove Springs? Because if we do all that, we can keep some of our beloved urban sprawl with rail corridors. Thank you. I'll take it off the air.
All right, Rusty. Nat.
That is an excellent question, and I really appreciate that because we are focusing on the future. I-95 is going to hit a red rating in terms of capacity in the next few years, and that is why we are aggressively studying commuter rail from St. Augustine to downtown Jacksonville. At this juncture, we do not have what I would say the level of engineering, planning, and design to actually go after the federal funding and to give some real definite numbers as it relates to implementing commuter rail. So in this package of funding, we will go to what's called 35% design. That is enough of a level of examination and analysis that we'll have the cost and we have enough information to then go to the federal government and Florida DOT to start looking at funding for the project. A great deal of work has to happen between St. John's County and Duval County to determine how we would pay for the system and the operation. And the great thing about the connection between St. Augustine and downtown Jacksonville, it makes the connection to the airport much more viable. Right now, downtown Jacksonville to the airport doesn't have the ridership to support major investment like commuter rail, but that additional leg, the first leg, clearly would generate the ridership that makes it a viable and attractive project funding. As it relates to the other connections, we haven't gotten to that point yet.
All right. Mark on the west side. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Well, I'm a little disappointed. I was hoping that this would be voted down. I went to a couple of the dog and pony shows about the new Skyway Express, and I still don't see how a car that holds 12 people, 14 people maximum is going to have any impact on congestion downtown. But hey, that's just me. What I did want to ask was, and I asked this question a couple of times at some of these meetings, and I never got a really good answer. Two questions. From the day you get the check from Jacksonville or whoever, and you start construction, when are we going to be in one of those autonomous vehicles going to all these places that you're saying we're going to go to autonomously? I want to know when. It's coming and this kind of thing. And also, are you going to be charging anything for this? I know that it's free to ride the Skyway Express now. Is there going to be a price to ride the new Skyway?
All right, Mark, thanks for that. So Nat Ford, the skeptics of this expenditure are certainly out there. A UNF poll found nearly 60% of the voters in Duval County didn't want to pay for this gas tax increase. So what about Mark's questions? When will they be able to use this system? Will it be free? What do you say to the skeptics out there?
Okay, first, let's start with the last question first. Yes, we will have to charge fares for the system in terms of its operation. But I just want to share, across the nation, there are a number of systems, particularly in downtown center cities, where they are complementary because downtown center cities could ill afford for all of the residents as well as office workers to actually drive at the same time. It would just lock down their cities. So they do support, complementary services in urban cores. As it relates to the capacity issue, its frequency creates capacity. So while we may have a 40-foot bus every 30 minutes, we can have many more of these smaller vehicles actually traveling in the same time frame at a much lower cost than operating a 40-foot bus. Then finally, the question as it relates to construction timeline. Bay Street Innovation Corridor, which is phase one, should be running in about 2 to 3 years. And then the overall conversion and extension, depending on federal funding on the extensions, we should see vehicles up and running within 6 to 7 years. So a pretty long horizon on the conversion, very complicated project to implement.
And what if you don't get the federal funding?
Well, then we would seek other funding sources. We have a great relationship with the state. We also have the opportunity to look at private investment in terms of these corridors because they will be operating in our commercial corridors. So there are numerous ways that we can, seek funding for the extensions, and we're confident that we'll be able to get that funding to move forward.
And your confidence is great, but can you understand why so many residents who've lived here for a long time and have seen so many ambitious plans proposed, actually approved, and then never come to fruition? Can you understand the skepticism?
Yeah, that is something I've had to come and learn. I've worked all across the country, and it is unique, something that in this particular case with the Skyway, it was very challenging to, start talking about the U2C because even with the last caller's comment, he's talking about extending the Skyway. The new system we're talking about, the only connection to the Skyway is the concrete infrastructure. This is a totally new system with technology that is the difference between a horse and buggy and, I guess, an automobile back in the day. So, that's the headwind that we have been challenged with. This team's track record, at least everything that the JTA has promised over the last 8.5 years of my tenure, we've delivered, and we've delivered, recognizably so, and that's why the City Council has trust in what we're doing.
Lots of tweets, emails. Here's a tweet. I live off King Street in Riverside. I work at the Baptist Medical Campus downtown. I am itching to use this public transport. Here's an email from Jonathan. Will the autonomous vehicles have space to carry items like a bicycle or a scooter? I'd like to go from my non-connected location with personal transport to a pickup station.
Very good question. Interestingly enough, the vehicles that we're planning on using, and so I go back to that comment related to the size of the vehicles. We have not made a final decision in terms of the type of vehicle we may use. We have right now in our possession a conventional, 20-passenger shuttle-type vehicle that has been retrofitted with an autonomous vehicle kit. Obviously, that vehicle can withstand having size-wise bicycles actually on that vehicle. Some of the more smaller vehicles, it'd be a bit of a challenge to get a bicycle or a scooter onto those vehicles. But, the interesting thing is final decisions have not been made. We'll be considering all of these types of elements as we go through our procurement and planning process.
Yeah. That makes sense to, because people would be more likely to use these vehicles if they could bike or scooter their way to a Skyway stop. That makes perfect sense.
It might be as simple as these vehicles that we're testing, putting a bike rack on the exterior of the vehicle. We just have to make sure that bicycle or whatever that element is, it's not blocking any of the sensors that actually make the vehicle safe to operate. So I want to be careful before I get too far ahead of the scientists and the engineers that are working on these technologies.
Sure. Michelle at the town center. Go ahead, Michelle.
Yes, hi. I would like to voice my extreme disappointment and outrage that this city's leadership balks at a half-cent sales tax increase to fund public schools to the point where they engage in multiple-year lawsuits to prevent it from even being voted on. And then suddenly the same mayor turns right around and gets the city council to have a 6-cent gallon increase for funding, I'm sorry, but pretty non-specific and very little accountability worked into the plan road construction projects. Somebody who's lived here a very long time, there are constant FDOT projects, JTA projects. I can't tell which agency is doing which one, and I don't have any way of logging into an online dashboard and seeing progress or progress to plan. No way of measuring accountability. I'll take my answer off the... Oh, one more thing. Why can't they just fund better, faster, more on-time bus routes?
Okay.
I'll take all my answers off the air.
All right, Michelle. Nat, a lot to digest from Michelle.
A lot to unpack. So 72 projects that have been detailed for this program. It's on the jobsforjax.net website. And then also the JTA has put up a website, particularly as it relates to the U2C project. As part of the legislation that was passed yesterday, there is a citizen advisory or oversight committee that will be formed where 12 citizens will be identified, four by the mayor, four by City of Jacksonville, City Council, and then four from the JTA to oversee the progress. And there will be a public dashboard that will be developed between the city and the JTA so that any citizen or stakeholder can take a look at our progress in terms of these projects. And I think that I can't recall what else was the caller's question. I think covered it.
Yeah, but also just noting that the leadership of the city fought the half-cent sales tax for schools tooth and nail, really. And there was a remarkable turnaround on this. Let's go to Ira on the south side. Hi, Ira.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. So I'm relatively new to Jacksonville, last 5 years, and one thing that I've noticed from my worldwide travels and work is there are amazing Art Deco high-tech bus stops throughout most of these world cities. As I drive around Jacksonville, it breaks my heart to see the working poor standing out on the grass at a bus stop, no cover, no seat, no lighting, no internet. Why can't you spend some of your tax dollars on fixing the bus stops around Jacksonville rather than building this this Jetsons play toy to nowhere? Thank you.
All right, Ira. You know, and Ira, it used to be a lot worse.
That's right.
It used to be so much worse. I remember when we first moved here in 2003, there were no bus shelters at all. None that I could see. And there are quite a few now, but certainly it's not where it could be. So what about that, Nat Ford?
Well, interestingly enough, that was one of the major reasons that I decided to take the position here in Jacksonville. I had come here from running the San Francisco MTA, and I think, as you know, I ran the MARTA system in Atlanta. And I was appalled at the condition of just our public transportation operation at that time. And I had the great opportunity to really start working with this agency and be able to start installing the proper bus stop infrastructure. And the caller is right. I mean, I vividly remember over 8 years ago, a elderly lady sitting on an overturned shopping cart at a bus stop. Mm-hmm. And I was actually going to a meeting, and on my way back, she was still sitting there. I'm glad, Melissa, you recognize that we've made investments in bus stops each year for the past few years. We have over 33,000 bus stops. We have 820 that remain that are not even ADA accessible. This bill funds fully accessible bus stop upgrades for our disabled community and senior citizens. So you will see 800 of those bus stops upgraded. And then in numerous corridors, particularly on the northwest side of Jacksonville, we have complete streets projects to put in shelters, upgrade the bus stops. So we are taking care of what the caller actually raised. And it's not the Jetsons, the autonomous vehicle transportation. Autonomous vehicle transportation may be new to Jacksonville, may be new to the United States, but they've been in operation for almost 10 years in some of the countries around the world.
Yeah,
so,
but it may feel like that to a lot of people. It may feel like that.
It's about our exposure to these things in terms of technologies that are far advanced in some other parts of the world, and we're bringing that type of technology to our constituency here in Jacksonville.
His boy Elroy, that's what I always think about when I think of the Jetsons. But Nat Ford, thank you so much. He's Nat Ford, CEO of JTA, as the authority moves ahead now with approval of the local gas tax. Thanks for your time, Nat.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead later in the hour, how to access our miles and miles of waterways this month. That's in our wild Florida. But up next.
Our goal is to fund early stage companies, startups, companies that are growing fast that look to do something big.
How Jacksonville's own PS27 Ventures is helping grow companies with a new fund on the street of some $20 million. That's next. Well, local firm PS27 Ventures is launching a new $20 million venture capital fund, and they're encouraging local companies to apply for this seed money. I spoke about it with their CEO, Jim Stallings. Hey, Jim. Good to be with you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. Always great to be with you.
So you have some big news at PS27 Ventures, a $20 million new venture capital fund you're announcing. This is pretty big.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It's one of the biggest, and it's a big project for us. It's something we've been working on for some time, and we just wanted to share the news with you and others in our First Coast area that we've launched a venture capital fund, and our goal is to fund early-stage companies, startups, companies that are growing fast that look to do something big. And we're looking to invest. We've actually started the fund, started the process, working with quite a few companies right now in the pipeline. We're very excited about it. We've been very busy, but very excited.
So for people listening to the sound of your voice right now, and they have a business and they're looking for funding, how would they know whether they meet your criteria? What kinds of businesses are you looking to invest in?
Well, that's a key question. So first, we like companies that they've started something. They've quit their job. They've invested some time. They've built a product or a solution. It could be software. It could be service. It could be some product. But they've got a little bit of traction. They've got some customers. And what they're looking for is seed capital to grow. Our check size is in the range of $500 to $1 million. And our goal is to get them to where they figure out their go-to-market strategy, who their key customer profile is, and start growing as fast as they can. It's also to help them build a team. In some cases, they may want to improve the version of their software, improve their marketing, launch a campaign. But that's really it. That's what we've been able to do with our other investments at PS27. Now, the areas we like, we've grown in our experience around software as a service, those SaaS companies, as they're known, and an e-commerce platform. So companies that have a B2C product where they're selling directly to a consumer, they're selling it on their website, and they want to grow even faster. We've learned a lot about working with Amazon and Shopify and some of the other big platforms. The other space we like is around health technology. I think we all realize just how health tech is changing, how healthcare and services are changing. And there are companies that have some innovative ideas about how to provide service better. I mean, I did my first virtual doctor's appointment the other day. I will probably never go to a doctor's office
again. Yeah.
Yeah, because we started on time. You know, he told me exactly what was wrong and what I need to go do. And, you know, we high-fived each other right there on the screen and off I went. It was so convenient. It was private. It was secure. But all those changes are coming to health technology. The same thing with financial services. And one of the areas I'm most excited about is what's going on with sustainability and green technology. Yeah, I think we're in a moment where people are realizing, you know, you can generate a lot of your own energy and you can consume your own energy. And there are solutions coming to market for companies and homes and businesses to do exactly that. And I think all those innovations are coming, and we want to invest in them. That's why we started the fund.
So this fund is, I guess, I don't know what the terminology is, active now? Should people contact you if they want to be considered for this round of funding?
Oh, yeah, it's active. We've been funded. We are looking at projects right now. As a matter of fact, we're about to announce a company that's got an incredible solution around augmented reality. So if you think about the way we buy product today, you either go online, you look at pictures. You may look at a video of something, you know, whether it's clothing or shoes or, you know, a golf club like I'm doing these days. And you want a better visual. So augmented reality allows you to not only see it better in 3D and high definition, it also allows you to project it into your current room, your presence, wherever you are. And you can get a better image of it in 3D right there. So we know shopping, and we know those experiences are changing. People are demanding it. The pandemic has put us all online. We've gone to become just to expect that whatever we need, whether it's groceries or any product or service, you can just go online and get it. Well, we know shopping is changed, and most likely it's going to be changed forever. So those things that allow people to have a better experience, a faster experience, a frictionless experience, as we say, those going to work. So we're looking at companies like that. We've begun already. If companies want to reach out to us, just go to our website, ps27ventures.com. There's a place to enter their information. We get right back to them within 24 hours. Hmm. But we're seeing such a wave of innovation following the pandemic. It's been unbelievable. We just couldn't wait to do this because we're like, we've got to be a part of it, and we got to be a part of it right here on the First Coast.
Check it out, everyone. He's CEO Jim Stallings. Check out their website at ps27ventures.com. Thanks, Jim. Keep us posted.
All right. Thank you, Melissa.
Well, Wolfson Children's Hospital is launching a major children's mental health initiative this month. It's called On Our Sleeves. It's part of a national movement, and the goal is to intervene before kids get into crisis by giving adults the tools they need to start conversations, break stigmas, and give children a voice. With more, we're pleased to welcome Terry Andrews, PhD, System Administrator for Baptist and Wolfson Children's Behavioral Health. Terry Andrews, good morning. Hi, Terry. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi. Good morning, Terry.
Hey, good morning.
Also with us, Melanie Patz. She's Vice President of Community Investment and Impact at Baptist. Melanie, good to have you.
Good morning, Melissa.
So this is called On Our Sleeves because kids often don't wear their thoughts on their sleeves, so it might be hard to tell if they're struggling. Let's begin with you, Terry Andrews. This is such a critical initiative right now because I know from talking to our own kids at home, the kids are in crisis. They've seen an unbelievable number of children, their peers at school, Baker acted or taken to Wolfson's for days of observation. This is just my own anecdotal experience. It's just been unbelievable in this pandemic what's happened with kids. So tell us what you're seeing at Wolfson's and why you feel it's so important to launch On Our Sleeves.
Absolutely. So thanks, Melissa, for having us. And this is such an important and timely topic. You know, we were already in a mental health crisis prior to the pandemic, and the pandemic has just escalated the significant lack of resources that we have in the community and in the nation. And so at Wolfson Children's Hospital, we've seen a significant increase in behavioral health emergency admissions in especially our teen population. Isolation has not done well for our teens, where their identity is really surrounded by their peers. And, you know, in fact, a hospital in Colorado just declared a state of emergency because of the significant increase in pediatric behavioral health admissions. Mm-hmm. And so on our sleeves, you know, we are committed to providing, you know, free educational resources to the community to learn about how to have good conversations with their children and teens about mental health.
So, Melanie Patz, how will this be implemented across the community?
We are doing things like talking with you and other journalists and anchors to spread awareness. We've got billboards, we've got ads, and we're driving everyone to wolfsonchildrens.com/onoursleeves. That's where people can sign up to receive a monthly newsletter, which will provide them with tips to initiate those conversations with the children in their life, and then also to have educational materials, activities that they can do with children to get them to start talking about their feelings and talking about the thoughts that they're having, the concerns that they're experiencing.
So this really does arm parents with tools, Terry Andrews, because parents don't know what to do. I know a lot of parents who are desperate to reach out and help their kids, and they're really worried about their kids. It can be difficult because often, as we've been discussing, the children just shut down.
Correct. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to have those crucial conversations. You know, as a parent myself, it's difficult to even ask my own child if they feel like that they want to end their life or harm themselves. And so at, you know, at the website, wolfsonchildrens.com/onoursleeves, we have these free downloadable resources, not only for parents, but also educators, where it has open-ended questions on these worksheets and coloring books and, you know, different ways to be able to have conversations about emotions. And, you know, one of the things that we really enjoy about On Our Sleeves is there are resources that also cater to the time of the year, like how to reenter school and what to do around holidays. And we've also received from the community about adding additional resources. You know, we are a military town, and so having resources for military families, you know, that is something that we will be adding to the website. And, you know, on our sleeves, it has these powerful icons that mean an emotion or a thought or feeling. And these, the downloadable PDFs have open-ended questions to have, you know, to start those conversations, such as what, you know, what do you feel thankful for today? And, you know, and so that's, you know, they tend to resonate with parents and educators.
And, you know, Melanie, I think going beyond the immediate crisis, most of us who have kids are worried about the long-term impacts on this generation's mental health because they have suffered a trauma and their brains are still developing. And this whole ordeal will really radically reshape the way they see the world as adults. What about the long-term effects on young people's mental health?
I think that's why On Our Sleeves is such an important campaign for us at this time. If you start those habits of having conversations with your children about what they're thinking and what they're feeling, those can last a lifetime so that when they continue to have challenges, they will come to you and share that, and there will be an opportunity to get them help early, so that we're not waiting until there's a crisis and they need to be, as you said, Baker-acted or come to the hospital for observation. We're really intervening as early as we possibly can.
Right. And as I look at the website, Terry Andrews, it's onoursleeves.org. Lots of free resources and access to information right on the website.
Correct. Yes. Lots of, you know, activities for parents, activities just for any adult to have conversations and spend quality time with the child, and also educators. you know, we are actively working with our community agencies as well as the schools to see how can we place, you know, them these free resources so that they can have good conversations with children and teens.
And is part of this, too, empowering parents to help guide their children's mental health? Because I know just from hearing through the grapevine with my own children, the hospitals are overwhelmed with families begging for help for their children. Are you finding that at Baptist and Wilson's?
You know, we are seeing a significant increase. And, you know, part of On Our Sleeves is really to reduce that stigma that we still see in the community today. And, you know, that is a campaign that we, you know, we are committed to, is to reduce that stigma, you know, and also have, we continue to still have the youth mental health first aid training in the community. We will come to your organization. We will come to your community. We will provide training so that people can identify the symptoms, you know, or statements that children and teens are making that they are really struggling right now.
We're talking with Terry Andrews and Melanie Patz with Baptist and Wilson Children's. So, Melanie, what else can you leave listeners with? What else will you be doing to help people connect to these resources?
I want to reiterate our website, wilsonchildrens.com/onoursleeves, and that's where you can sign up for the monthly newsletter that will bring those educational materials right to you. In addition, if someone needs help immediately, we also have a 24/7 helpline and a 24/7 text line. Terry, will you share the number for the helpline and the text line?
Yes. We offer a 24/7 kids and teens mental health helpline. It's confidential, free. It can be just, you know, questions of resource, you know, how to access resources in the community. Or, you know, parents can call, teens can call if they feel that someone is entering into a mental health crisis, and that's 202-2800. We have
You broke up there. Can you say that again?
Oh, I'm sorry. 202-7900.
You broke up again. Is it 202-7900? Is that right?
That is right.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Alrighty.
And then the texting, and then the texting line is 741-741, and you can text LIFE, L-I-F-E, to that number, and there will be nationwide counselors available to text with you.
Thank you both, ladies. Terry Andrews, PhD, System Administrator at Baptist and Wilson Children's Behavioral Health, and Melanie Patz, VP of Community Investment and Impact there. It's onoursleeves.org. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. And in a moment, how you can get out on the water this month. That's coming up in our Wild Florida.
Florida Polytechnic University, ranked among the top 40 public universities for best undergraduate engineering colleges by U.S. News & World Report, and the only Florida university in this category. More information is available at floridapoly.edu.
CNS Healthcare is offering an agitation associated with Alzheimer's dementia research study. Has Alzheimer's changed your loved one? Have they shown verbal or physical symptoms of agitation? Learn more at cnshealthcare.com.
When you listen to NPR, you tap into a network of local reporters working in communities across the country. The expertise of our national correspondents and the international reach of our journalists reporting around the world. NPR is everywhere you are and wherever the stories are for 50 years and counting.
To give a gift now, go to wjct.org/radio and thank you.
On the next Fresh Air, New York Times reporter Nick Corasaniti talks about new voting laws proposed in Republican-controlled legislatures to restrict voting rights, limit ballot initiatives which could undermine Republican goals, and stiffen penalties for poll workers and election officials who make even minor mistakes. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
President Biden travels to Tulsa next week to mark the centenary of one of the worst incidents of racial violence in American history.
How do you commemorate an event that gives dignity and honor to the people who've been lost?
Three descendants of the city's race massacre share their stories on the next 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, there have been calls from across town recently for more water access. Guess what? You're in luck. The city has many new projects nearing completion that will get you out on the water. Florida Master Naturalist Lisa Vick Gruba has been checking this out, and she's on the line now. It's today's Wild Florida. Hey, Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Okay, so it's getting hotter out there. People are still looking for fun things to do outside. So tell us what's going on out on the waterways.
Well, like you said, the good news is that the city has really been at work for several years increasing public access to the waterways. And so today I want to talk about just three of the projects, and there are many others. And later then I want to tell you about ways that beginning paddlers can get started out on our area waterways. So first, I'll tell you what's going on downtown. Downtown's always a hot topic in this area. Basically, the city is adding and repairing docks downtown. There has been a long time complaint from boaters that there's no dockage downtown except for where the water taxi already docks, and there's no access to restaurants. And so on the South Bank, they are adding new slips at Friendship Fountain, which is right there in front of the Museum of Science and History, and then a little ways to the east in front of River Point Tower, they are going to get some new slips. Across the river at the landing, those docks, or the former landing site, those docks are under repair, and they were damaged during Hurricane Irma. And I know that a lot of people, a lot of boaters have been very frustrated at, you know, the amount of damaged docks in the area. And I want to say that in following this, I don't think the city has been dragging its feet at all. The truth is that we had so much dock damage in the area and in the state after the hurricanes that basically there just weren't enough dock builders. And the prices for new docks just went through the roof. So it has just taken the city a while to get, you know, find adequate dock builders, you know, for a good price. But the landing site docks are under repair. They're going to add new docks in front of the Times Union Center. First, they've got to repair that. They've got to rebuild the bulkhead there. It's just gotten old. But they'll add new docks there. And then in two neighborhoods that have never had water access before, Brooklyn and Five Point, they are getting docks. So at Brooklyn, that the dock will be at Jackson Street, which is by the YMCA. And in Five Point, it will be where Post Street meets the river, which is by the Comer. After they get those docks built, then they have something really cool coming. They're going to do downtown light shows. So they they'll have light shows from the Times Union Center and from Friendship Fountain that will interact. And so you can go down to the river, either, you know, on shore or on the pedestrian bridge over the bridges, or from your boat, and there'll be nighttime light shows.
So that's exciting.
That's pretty exciting.
Okay. And there are some other projects that you wanted to talk about too, including some new fishing piers. Is that right?
Well, there are three new fishing piers on the Trout River, and there's a new conservation area a new recreation area that was announced in November. It's called Seven Creeks Recreation Area. And what the city did was combine land that was already up there that was national, state, and city park, and they combined it into kind of one area so that there's like coordinated maps and coordinated trails. And so basically in the area where they combined Betts, Tiger Point Preserve, Bogey Creek, Cedar Creek, and Pumpkin Hill all into one area. And Brian Burkett, who is the waterfront project manager with parks, recently kayaked the area, and he said, it is very natural. You barely see any signs of human habitation. He said there was jumping fish, wading birds, dolphins.
Mm.
At one place, he even saw he said what looked like 1,000 white pelicans, which
beautiful.
I've not seen a lot of white pelicans over here.
Yeah, worth a visit.
Beautiful.
Now, in the short time we have left, when my dad was in town recently, he wanted to take our daughters kayaking, and the only place I could think of to send him was Kayak Amelia. What about kayaking places?
Okay, so there's three great sites for information. The city website, visit Jacksonville's website, and there are paddling guides. So the paddling guide, the city and the public trust have put together, and the city provides them free. They're laminated guides. They should be at area outfitters or sporting goods stores. The city website on the parks page has an interactive map with all of our boat ramps. We have over 50 boat ramps in the area. Visit Jacksonville site has, access to all kinds of information about sailing, boating, paddle boarding, surfing, anything you want to do out on the water. So those are really good comprehensive sites to use.
Check it out, and check out Lisa's website too, Florida Field Notes. Always good to hear about wild Florida once a month from Lisa. And we'll
see you out on the water.
Yeah, we'll see you out on the water. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks a lot, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Keep those emails coming. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and catch our podcast up later today, wherever you like to listen. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Talk to you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.